Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
So we've seen people say something and try to walk it back. We've seen people say something and then sincerely apologize. We've seen people say something and then just try to get the hell away from it as fast as they can because they don't like the heat that's coming away with it. We talked a lot last week about Drew Brees and his subsequent apologies. Roger Goodell went on June 5th and delivered a message saying that basically we got it wrong the first time and we'd like to try to do better moving forward. Here's Roger Goodell's statement late last week.
It has been a difficult time for our country, in particular black people in our country. First, my condolences to the families of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and all the families who have endured police brutality. We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe black lives matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much needed change in this country. Without black players, there would be no National Football League. And the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of black players, coaches, fans, and staff. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
So it's pretty rare to see a league come out and say, you know what, we got it wrong. We got it wrong and we need to do better and I'm going to do better. Did he get it right this time, LZ? Was the commissioner's statement the one that you wanted to hear?
Well, he's close. And I don't know if the reason why he didn't mention Colin Kaepernick's name was legal or not in terms of what the settlement, the wording of the settlement, I don't know. Mm-hmm. What I do know is that because we didn't hear that name, I didn't feel as if the apology went all the way there. Because there really is one specific person out of everyone that you need to apologize to. And that's the one that tried to tell you about this at the very beginning. And instead of rewarding him and applauding him for his courage, you blackballed him from the league and then you try to scrub him away from the history of the league. So, I don't know if he didn't mention his name because he legally couldn't mention his name without getting the league into further trouble. Mm-hmm. But the lack of his name being said just undermined just how sorry he was in my eye. Now, that's my eye, and I'm a hard ass when it comes to this topic. Other people, they may have felt as if that was good enough, and that's cool. That's good. That's fine. I will simply say it's like a husband being caught cheating. And he apologizes to women everywhere, but he doesn't apologize to his wife. That's what it's like to me. But she is a woman that's everywhere, so it's broad enough to include her. So, you know, that's what he said. He was like, we apologize to all, you know, so you just go say everybody so that, you know, Colin's in there somewhere, but there's some specific grievances that you didn't address. But I see what it is.
I thought that the statement was interesting in that he's basically giving the players in the NFL a green light to express themselves moving forward. To if players want to take a knee, and obviously they're going to. I mean, Adrian Peterson said as much that he expects, you know, a vast majority of people in the NFL to do that when we get to the game, that the NFL is not going to police that, for lack of a better phrase. I think that's important. But what's being said on June 8th is one thing, and then the heat, if the heat has waned at all by the time we get into August and September and the meat of the NFL season, if in fact, are they still being proactive? Are they still discussing the issues that got us here in the first place? Are we still talking about these things in a productive way that we have in the last couple of weeks? Or is it more lip service? Like, yep, we support all of our players and their causes. And okay, let's kick this thing off. And here we go. It's the Rams and the Packers. And we're watching football again. Or are they committed to continuing to have this dialogue? Because it happened fast, right? We saw that the president of the United States went at Drew Brees. After Drew Brees apologized, it's, oh, why did you do that? You shouldn't have done that. It's about the flag. And then Drew Brees, to his credit, said, no, I was wrong the first time. I stand by my statements. Now the president of the United States has said to Roger Goodell, are you going to let this happen? I thought we've already been through this. Are you going to continue to let players disrespect the flag and our national anthem? The last time that happened, the league backed down. Will they do it again?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, I certainly feel as if Roger Goodell would not have made that statement in a silo. He did not, you know, get up from the kitchen table, went downstairs with his iPhone and just decide, I'm going to say this without conferring with not just any NFL owners, but his most powerful allies and the ones who are strongest among the brotherhood of NFL owners. I'm sure everyone's not, you know, on board with it. I'm sure there are people who are worried about their bottom line. The question remains, however, is whether or not the NFL is going to be willing to deal with the heat that's going to be coming from the White House as this conversation persists, as images of Neely makes it to our airways, while it's being talked about during the presidential debates, perhaps during, you know, TV commercials, having people who, you know, side on the president's side say, I'm boycotting the NFL. If it really believes in its message to the point in which it's willing to take that smoke, or if they're going to double back. And if they double back, Travis, that's going to be even worse for them. Mm-hmm. It's going to be even worse. You talk about you're going to be through with baseball. I'm going to be through with football if they backslide and go, well, you know what? Now we got to punish the players again for protesting.
Well, I don't think they can do that, LZ. Because to your point, if they go from where we were, you know, for the last several seasons to where they say they want to be now, and again, what they're saying, you know, we'll see what it looks like come the fall. But if we do get to the fall and all of a sudden there are players that are taking a knee and the NFL responds to that in anything other than with full-throated support, they're going to look ridiculous. Now, what they can do is kind of do nothing. They're not punish anybody, not go out of their way to say, and I don't want to put anybody's name in there, but this player over here, hey, we love this guy. We love that he's doing this. We think that he's bringing attention to an incredibly important issue, and we support you, and we're going to donate X amount of dollars to this. There's full-throated support, and then there's just kind of, we're just going to pretend that we're not really seeing it, that we don't really know what's going on, that we're going to have it here. As opposed to punishing, they could try to get back to that middle ground if the backlash is significant enough.
Well, what's the middle ground?
The middle ground that they tried to play for the last 5 seasons.
Where I was like, but that middle ground's gone now.
Now it is, LZ. I hope it's gone forever, but I hope it's gone forever. But as we get closer, and let's say maybe it's not this season, maybe it's the following season, that I would not be surprised if they try to get back towards the middle a little bit.
But here's the thing, though. They didn't create the middle ground. They weren't sustaining the middle ground. They were just simply taking advantage of the middle ground. The NFL wasn't by itself in terms of a corporation or a network or a business trying to play that middle ground and finding it as a good, safe spot. They didn't invent that area. But what's happening is that area, whether through climate change or osmosis, but that island they were on is disappearing. And people are having far little, they're having far more objection to you trying to play the middle ground than you just choosing a side. And so that middle ground you talk about, Travis,
yeah,
is disappearing. A choice is going to have to be made. And I'm going to assume they're going to want to choose the side their players are on, because if Roger Goodell is correct, there would be no NFL without these players. And it's just about having the courage to stick to it. But I don't feel as if a middle ground is where they're going to end up, because that middle ground is gone.
Let me put it like this. Drew Brees, the president directed a message at Drew Brees, said Drew, and then Drew Brees responded, no, I was wrong. This is what it's about. This is what I'm doing. I'm curious to see if the NFL follows through, because the NFL went and said what they said on the 5th, and now the president of the United States has gone back and said, hey, what about the flag? What about our great military? What about those issues? And now we're waiting for the NFL to return serve. Like, are they going to do what Drew Brees said and say, that's not what this is about? It was never about that. It's about police brutality. It's about the brutalization of members of our society for no reason. It's about the systemic and institutionalized racism in these institutions. It has nothing to do with the flag and the military. Or do they just let it sit there and see which way the wind is blowing? That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I severely doubt that they're going to sit there and just decide which way the wind is blowing, because they're not even the captain of the ship right now. It's the players. So, you know, the players are deciding. Now, if the players are fatigued from this and the players are no longer on message about this, then the league is okay to go ahead and stick their finger in the air because they're back in control. But as of right now, as we like to say with Amin, the players are saying, I am the captain. And because they are the captain, they're the ones that decide which direction that they're going to go on this topic, not the NFL commissioner and not the owners. For now, we'll see if there's fatigue, but not for now.
Speaking of Amin, he's going to join us at 9 o'clock. LZ, there is good news on the baseball front. Maybe not great news, but good news. We'll tell you what it is next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Are you a cartoons guy, LZ? Either now or as a kid, would you park in front of the TV and spend hours watching cartoons?
Bruh, I still watch Teen Titans today.
So there you go. So that's a yes,
so
right?
Yes. That is a yes.
Were you a Looney Tunes guy? Like, you know, Porky Pig, Elmer Fudd, Bugs Bunny? Was that your jam at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, of course. Of course. Until I found out the real truth. But yeah, growing up, yeah. Yeah, sure.
But they're going to reboot, right? The Looney Tunes is going to have a reboot, but the a couple of their more iconic characters, Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam, will no longer have guns. Now, they're still going to blow people up with dynamite, drop anvils and bank safes on people's heads and blow people up, but no more guns for Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam.
That is the stupidest thing I think I've heard you say. So you can have nuclear warheads, but guns is a no-no.
Right.
Stop. Right.
You can drop a bank safe on his head, but you cannot have you cannot have Elmer Fudd hunting Bugs Bunny with his rifle anymore. We're not doing that.
It's so stupid. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. You don't want to glorify weapons and all. I get it. But if you're going to take that route, then take the route. You can't say no guns, but I can hit you in the head with a baseball bat.
But LZ, we do have but we do have breaking news on the reboot of the cartoons.
Uh-oh.
Bugs Bunny will still dress in drag.
And cut.
All right. Dude, that was some of my favorite parts. I didn't even know what drag was.
Why does Bugs have lipstick on? What's going on over there?
Like it was like, oh, Bugs is dressed up like a girl now. Okay, blah 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 blah. And then I got older, and I was like, going, oh, he was in drag. Oh.
Who was your favorite Looney Tunes guy? Was it any of the ones we've talked about? Fudd or Yosemite Sam or Bugs Bunny, Foghorn Leghorn, or Marvin the Martian? Any of them?
Well, Bugs seemed like he was part of the community, so I got to roll with him, I guess.
He
was low key.
Was the Tasmanian Devil? Did it have a name, or was it just Tasmanian Devil? Because I'd like when he'd spin around and tear stuff up. He never really had anything to create chaos. But I like that guy.
I don't think he had. I don't think he had a name besides just Tasmanian Devil. And then, you know what was also funny? We had Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Right.
So I moved to Arizona. Right? I bought this house in Arizona. I'm living out there, blah, 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 whatever. And there's these birds running all over the road. And I go, Steve, what is this? And he's like, those are Roadrunners. I said, no, they're not. Roadrunners are like 6 feet tall.
Yes, yes.
And they run around like, man, have you seen an actual Roadrunner?
We have them in our neighborhood all over the place. They're okay. Around here a lot. So they're small. They're when it's standing there, what is it, 6-8 inches tall? It's not very big at all.
Yeah, if that. But the freaking cartoon had me thinking it was like the size of like a ninth grader.
Well, and then poor Wile E. Coyote gets killed 1,900 yes. different ways, but we're not going to get to shoot him anymore. We can still hit him with a truck, but we can't shoot him anymore. That's not an option.
See, this is why people, you know, they roll their eyes when people have the gun debate. Because it's like, yeah, wow. you can't have all of Hollywood saying we're for gun control, and then you got John Wick come out and he kills everybody just shooting every 5 seconds. Like, you got to pick a lane.
I guess so. Well, the lane is no more gun for Elmer Fudd. How about this? This is a tweet. According to Carl Ravitch, MLB has made a proposal to the players. 75% of their prorated salary over a 76-game schedule, playoff pool money, no draft pick compensation for signing players, season finishes September 27th, postseason ends at the end of October, a significant move towards player demands and an effort to play more. It seems like it, because you see 75% of prorated salary over 76 games. It feels like you're getting more money. They're still getting about a third of what the contracts initially said, which is about the same thing as all of these other proposals have gone through. These are roughly the same numbers in different forms. So while it's a different offer, if I'm a player and you do the math, you're thinking, I'm getting relatively the same amount of money you offered me in the other offer. So I don't know how much I guess that there's a new offer is good news, because something is better than nothing, but this feels like a similar offer with different wrapping paper.
Yeah. When I last saw, you know, it looked as if baseball said, this is our final offer, and we walk away from the table.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then short period of time later, you got this offer. And it might just be, you know, the shell game where they just kind of move around the same piece and it looks like it's different to your point. But it shows that they're also have come back to the table in a very quick period of time. So maybe they're realizing that for no other reason than from a PR perspective, them digging in their heels as you normally would in a negotiation process is not a good look. You need to be at least appearing that you're trying to work this thing out, because the optics of it is just so bad for baseball. It's so bad. So even if you're still trying to squeeze them, what you can't do is look as if you're playing a hard ass during this when everyone else has figured it out.
Well, yeah. The solution to this is for the owners to say, look, here are our books. This is the amount of money we bring in from games, from concessions, from parking, from all of these things. This is the amount of money we've allocated to player salaries. We have lost, whatever the number is, X percent of our income. Therefore, we're asking you in good faith to also reduce your income by said X percent. Why don't we do that as opposed to, hey, we're broke, man. You're going to have to take an 80% cut. Because I hear what you said, but you're going to need to prove to me that you're broke when you've been lying to me for 100 years about how much money is coming in. That being said, that we can get into the economics. We could bring in a player who could – Tom Glavine said this, what was it, a month ago? Remember, Tom Glavine was the face of the players during the 94 strike. And he kept saying to himself, and his philosophy was, I'm going to keep going in front of people and explaining to them our position, explaining to them why we believe our position is righteous and that this is where we need to be, because they're not giving us the whole story. It was a disaster. And he said recently, it was a disaster. I thought I could convince people of our positioning with the math, with a reasonable explanation, and it didn't work. I think that's what the owners are banking on, that they know that for whatever reason, when it comes down to these labor disputes, sports fans, almost without exception, line up with the owners. I can't even begin to tell you why they prefer the billionaire's position over the millionaire's position, but they do. The heat comes to the players. Why won't you work for millions of dollars when, you know, you're playing a kid's game? That whole silly argument. But that's how it goes. And it feels like that's what the owners are banking on now, because they keep offering the same position. The players keep saying, this is ridiculous. You want me to take an 80% cut if you're Mike Trout? I'm not going to do that. You're still offering me the same amount of money. The owners are banking on what we've been talking about today, and that is pox on both of your houses, especially the players. I'm out of here. I don't need this anymore, because the offer is the same over and over again.
Yeah, and it's a smart bet. You know, I would argue that there may be a slight change in the public consumption of this conversation because there's been a real emphasis starting with Occupy Wall Street with, you know, money and billionaires and the okie dokes that happens when the ultra rich are in power. There are a lot more people who are a little bit more cognizant of this dynamic than what was happening back in the mid-90s when they tried to strike with Tom Glavine as the face. But I think overall, I don't think the needle has moved enough in this space that gives the players cover. They recognize that the owners weren't these shiny beacons on the field the way they may have thought way back when. They now see the greed, and they're willing to call it out. And that's something that that wasn't present in the 90s. But I don't think it's enough of a cover so that the baseball players themselves don't also still look greedy because they're millionaires. And I've always felt that was an unfair sort of process, if you will, in terms of looking at this subject, because they're not responsible for the market. You know, they didn't set the market. They're just taking advantage of the market. And to punish them for taking advantage of the market that they helped create, I think is a wrong position to take, but I certainly can appreciate it. But this money grab by the owners in this situation during a pandemic is inexcusable. But it's pro baseball. This is just what they do.
It's what they've always done, both sides. All right, Scott Miller from Bleacher Report. We'll talk to him about this, the likelihood of the return of the season, and also Major League Baseball's hesitancy to get into the debate of social reform, social justice, police brutality. They're one of the last leagues to offer a statement. We'll talk to him about both of those things next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
All right, so Major League Baseball has made a new proposal to the players. The short version of it is a 75% prorated salary over a 76-game schedule. The season would end by the end of September, and the playoffs would end at the end of October. Joining us right now to discuss that and to discuss some other issues going on in Major League Baseball is Scott Miller from Bleacher Report, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Scott, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. Good. How about yourselves?
Fantastic. So let's start with the short version of this, Scott. Are we going to see Major League Baseball in 2020, in your opinion?
I still maintain yes, for a couple reasons. I mean, it looks you could flip a coin right now. It granted, the rhetoric between the players and owners has not been good. Big surprise. That's the way it's been throughout baseball history. But look, it's a $12 billion a year industry right now, like every other sector of the economy and society. It's a bloodbath economically. Baseball is losing a ton, but I always go back to economics. It's all about money in this country anyway. And I think the players and the owners, as big as the divide has been, in the end, each side is going to recognize its own self-interest, which is to figure something out so that they can recoup even a little bit of all this money being lost. Because if they don't, then they don't recoup any of it. And, you know, as much as the players may distrust the owners, you know, measure that against if they can earn some money this year versus none, you go for the money. So I think we're going to have baseball, but probably sometime in July. But the roller coaster of negotiations is going to continue for a little bit.
From a PR perspective, who comes out looking worse?
You know, good question, legitimate question. I'll give you a couple of answers. I think one, the players. Because rightly or wrongly, historically, the public always bashes the players, and I've never been able to figure that out. I think it's just because the player salaries are all out there. So the, you know, the public is going to say, you know, if they can't figure this out, you know, whoever it is, you know, Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw and all these guys, they make all, they're overpaid anyway, and they need to figure out. They're all a bunch of greedy players. But what's funny to me is the owners who mostly are faceless. Most fans couldn't name you who which owner is, you know, mostly. I mean, I know here in Los Angeles, you know, people know, okay, Magic Johnson's part of the ownership group. But the owners, generally speaking, I mean, they're the billionaires. They're the ones that are even richer than the players. And it's fascinating to me because I don't understand why the knee-jerk reaction for so many in this country is to blame players when it is opposed to the system and the owners. And you know, that goes for non-baseball as well. I mean, you know, some of these corporations that make gobs and gobs and gobs of money, and then they lay people off because they're, you know, the stock isn't high enough. You know, that's all, to me, wrapped up together. So I think the players are going to get blamed. But, you know, basically I think I would place the blame, you know, pretty close to equally because, look, you guys are both very, very well off. Get in a room, shut up, figure it out, be creative, don't exit the room until you come to a deal.
Scott Miller joining us from Bleacher Report. And Scott, with that in mind, because I think that would be the sentiment of most baseball fans, that you guys, I don't care who's right, I don't care who's wrong. All I know is I love baseball and it's not being played again. If they can't figure it out, if they go through a season where the NFL is playing, the NBA is back, the NHL is holding their playoffs, the MLS, that everything else is going and baseball isn't, what does that do to the sport long term? Do people check out? Because we've heard it a million times, whether it's the steroids or the strike in 94, that's it, I'm done with it. And like you just said at the beginning of our conversation, this is a $12 billion industry, so people are obviously not done with it. Will they come right back again?
I don't think they will come right back, no. I think it'll be catastrophic for the sport if they don't get on the field this year. For a couple of reasons. One, you know, I've covered the game long enough. I go back to that 94-95 strike. I was covering the game back then. And, you know, it came back, but it came back very slowly. I mean, you know, a lot of people give credit to the Maguire-Sosa home run race for helping bring baseball back. Well, that was 1998, you got to remember. The strike was 94-95. The game came back on the field in late April of 95. Home run race was 98, so the rest of 95, 96, 97, I mean, those were three long years. And then even in 98, it didn't bring everybody back. And I still talk to people today that say, yeah, you know, since then I don't watch the baseball as much as I did. So I think from that perspective, it'll come back, but it's going to be really slow. And will it come back to the level it's been? I have my doubts. You have a lot of people that are saying, you know, it'll be down around the NHL level in terms of the national consciousness, almost as like kind of a niche sport. Because, you know, look, if they don't play this year, the last pitch of Game 7 of the World Series last October, from that point until if we assume, and God, I hope we're all going to be correct if we assume that by next April, the coronavirus will be in the rearview mirror and we'll have life somewhat back to normal again. But if we have opening day within all that next April, from the last pitch of the World Series last October to opening day next April, that's 17 months. That will be 17 months for baseball to just be dark. And, you know, we also talk so much about the younger generation, baseball's need to hook it. Because the young people, it's a slow game for them. They haven't taken to it as much as their parents and grandparents. You go dark for 17 months. Those people are going to find other things to do and forget about the game of baseball. And then, you know, it's going to be even harder for baseball when it comes back to bring people back.
At what point do you think we're going to be at a critical point in which negotiations have gone too far, and now from just a climate perspective, it's going to be impossible to do 80-some games?
You know, that depends on how creative people are willing to get within the game. The way you would get around the climate is, you know, it's been bandied about pushing the postseason into November or even December. But obviously, even if you go too deep in November, what would happen is you would have to have games at neutral sites or domed climate control stadiums. So, in other words, if you say, let's say we had a World Series the last week of November, and let's say it was the New York Yankees against the Atlanta Braves. And last week in November, the weather would be so dicey. I mean, you might have to have that at Dodger Stadium or Petco Park or down in Miami where they've got a dome stadium. You know, so the neutrals, I don't think there's much appetite in the game to do that, to have, you know, your jewel events at neutral sites where the atmosphere probably wouldn't be all that great. So, you know, the other thing, the two things you keep hearing right now that the players and owners are talking about, you know, the owners are really pushing to do a shortened season and still do the postseason in October and be done by roughly November 1st, give or take a couple days. There are two reasons for that. One, the owners, one, again, everything comes back to money. The postseason TV contract, that's where baseball can make the biggest share of all this lost revenue back, is the postseason TV money. That right now is October. If you push the postseason back, like into a neutral site or whatever in November or December, the postseason TV deal has to be renegotiated, because the agreement with the networks right now is the postseason will be played during a certain period of time, and then that's October. You go into November or December, you got to renegotiate that, and the TV networks obviously have all kinds of dates filled up with NFL football, with college football, you know, that those sports. So baseball's real estate gets less, and that could mean they would have to take less postseason money. The owners don't want any part of that. The second reason why the owners are pushing to shorten season and, you know, postseason, and by the end of October, early November, is they're also scared, based on what the scientists and the CDC says, of this potential second wave of the coronavirus coming back, you know, early winter. So if that comes back in, say, November, and the baseball playoffs either haven't started or say they're a week or two into it and they have to shut down, that would be catastrophic for the game, because the owners say they would lose even more money. And then if they can't finish the whole postseason, well, then there goes some TV money, and then that's something they don't want any part of.
Scott Miller joining us from Bleacher Report here on the morning show. Scott, I know you wrote about this recently. Baseball was one of the last major sports leagues to offer a comment on the death of George Floyd, the protests surrounding the murder of George Floyd. They left out some key words in the statement that they did issue. Baseball used to be at the front of this a long time ago, and it seems like they're last now. Why?
Yeah, you know, it's, to me, it's part of the reason why the NBA even has passed baseball in terms of the national consciousness and national popularity. The NBA has become so progressive and hip, and it's connected with people in multiple cultures, in multiple economic stratas. And baseball is just, for whatever reason, it goes back to the leadership, and they haven't figured out ways to do that. And, you know, again, as I mentioned earlier in our talk here this morning, you know, I go back, you know, I've covered baseball, you know, 25, 30 years. You know, I devoted a significant portion of my life to it. I don't cover any other sports. I'm baseball all the time. You know, so, I mean, it's important to me as it is to many others. And it's the sport of Jackie Robinson. This is what I wrote on Friday. But you can't, in baseball, by all rights, should be hugely proud of Jackie Robinson and what the sport did in him, bringing him to break the color line. I mean, that was 1947. It was 17 years before the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So kudos. Baseball should bang that drum loudly. But at the same time, every April 15th, the anniversary of Robinson breaking the color line, every April 15th, as I wrote, you can't just trot Jackie Robinson out like a show horse year after year after year without also progressing and having the sport be active in and do other things to advance the cause of social justice. And that's where baseball, I think, has gotten a little too caught up looking at its past rather than its future. I think that's why the NBA's passed it. I think that's why it ran into trouble with its own black players. As I noted in the column on Friday, a number of them were involved in a chat room, you know, discussion online privately. And there was some outrage. They're like, where is our sport? Why is our sport the only one that hasn't commented on this? And there was some back and forth with the commissioner's office on that. And, you know, baseball was late to the game. And, you know, I think baseball's always set a high standard, and I think it should be held to a high standard.
It's well worth your time to go read Once a Leader of Social Justice. MLB is now embarrassing the behind the times. That's Scott Miller on Bleacher Report. Go find that. Go read it. Scott, appreciate you coming on this morning. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, guys.
Thank you, sir.
You got it. LZ, let's come back and talk about the last part that Scott just said right there. Why are they so far behind? Why were they the last major league to respond to the topics that we've been talking about for the last several weeks? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Indeed. Welcome to Shyla. Keyshawn and Jen had their baby. Do we know? Is it early this morning? Was it late last night? But she is here. She is healthy. Mom and baby are doing well. So congrats, Key. Welcome, Shyla. Another member of the Johnson family is here.
Woo-hoo. And as I said before, I will volunteer to be the godfather. I will make sure that when you're looking, she's vegan, but when I'm with her, she's a carnivore.
Yeah,
she's
going to
know what Mickey D's tastes like. She's going to know what a real chicken nugget, not a cauliflower chicken nugget, no,
right,
a real processed meat chicken nugget.
Yeah, that all the bits that they get together and grind them and put them exactly back into the form of a piece of chicken, but pretty good stuff, drop them in the oil. So congratulations to them. Key obviously is going to spend some time with his family this week, and look forward to having him back. But welcome to Shyla. Great, great news.
Absolutely.
It's interesting, LZ, that talking with Scott Miller there, and I would really recommend people go and read his piece on Bleacher Report about this. He mentioned it. Baseball was the first. Baseball went and broke the color barrier with Jackie Robinson, and that was back in 1947. And baseball was not only America's pastime at that point, but also incredibly popular within the black community. And the best players in baseball at the time, or many of the best players in baseball at the time, were black players, whether it was Hank Aaron or Willie Mays or Frank Robinson and Jackie Robinson and all these guys. And then fast forward to where we are now, the percentages of American black players in the Major League Baseball continue to go down and down. It continues to be less and less popular in the black community. And baseball was the very last of our major American sports to offer a statement on the protests that have gone throughout the entire country. That this is a weird position for the sport that started this to be last on this. There's something there, no?
Well, I don't know what that something is, but yes, there is something there. There's something there only in the sense of, to your point, you were the sport that integrated baseball. You were the sport in which a large number of athlete celebrities came from baseball. And somewhere along the lines, you as a league lost your way in this space. And I don't know if it's because of, you know, when you look at the other major sports, baseball has a large percentage of Latino players and has a growing percentage of Asian players. And so it's hard for me to say with a straight face that baseball isn't diverse, because it truly is a diverse sport. But it is curious as to why the investment within the black neighborhoods and a concerted effort to try to make sure that Jackie Robinson's legacy is preserved vis-a-vis visibility is no longer a priority. It is weird. And then you compound that dynamic with the fact that you were trailing in this space. It's odd. It's very, very odd. But I don't know what to point to in terms of the reasons why. I don't know what it is.
Scott mentioned in his piece too that a number of black players in Major League Baseball were having a conversation amongst themselves and feeling discouraged about what's going on. There was an interesting piece about Tim Anderson, who plays for the Chicago White Sox, a very, very good player, and that he felt that he really could not be himself on the baseball field, and that he really had to kind of tamp down his personality to fit into the baseball culture. And I don't know when it happened, but it did happen. And baseball became – how am I supposed to put this? The Madison Bumgarner percentage of the league became more and more vocal when talking about the Yasiel Puig percentage of the game. So these old school guys that were very uncomfortable with outspoken players, and it seems that they're doing this for very similar reasons than what we've seen other leagues do it, that they want to make sure that their fans know which side of these issues that they're on. That this is what I'm about, that this is what the sport used to be about and should be about. It's kind of this signaling stuff, and baseball seems to have really kind of wrapped its hands around this over the last couple of decades. This, well, you know, put your head down and run around the bases, where other leagues, you know, the NFL to varying degrees, sometimes it's cool to celebrate, sometimes it's not. The NBA has always been a league of self-expression, but baseball has gone out of its way to not only not encourage it of late, but to actively discourage it among its players. I know that they have that Let Them Play campaign where they have pictures of King Griffey Jr. with his hat on backwards hitting home runs and whatever, but it seems window dressing because the players in the sport themselves seem to be very aggressively against that sort of stuff, and we all know what that means.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird because baseball is also the sport that has a buddy of mine, former baseball player, including he played for a short period of time, the Detroit Tigers, where I'm from, and also I believe he played for the Dodgers for a little bit, Billy Bean. Job is to talk to organizations, the franchises, about the importance of diversity and inclusion and making sure that they have what they need in terms of resources to make sure that no one feels as if they're on the outside looking in. Now, Billy Bean, for those who don't know, it's one of the first openly gay former baseball players. And Major League Baseball hired him to go and give talks and help with training for teams to not only deal with the issue of LGBTQ players, but just diversity in general. So they've shown a willingness to have resources focused in on making sure that the umbrella, that the tent is as big and as welcoming as you want it to be. But for some reason, this blind spot has persisted, and I don't know exactly what that is.
They were one of the last to get in on it. We'll talk more about that coming up. Plus, friend of the program, Amin El Hassan, will join us next. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.